Welcome to the Scariest Things Podcast, your gateway to the trends and tropes of the horror genre. Tonight, episode 116, our favorite horror movie trailers. And we actually have, unlike most times, we actually have a real professional on the show. We have John Foley, a friend of the podcast, who I met pre-pandemic, I mean right pre-pandemic.
Yep, immediately.
In Los Angeles, and I think I might have actually caught COVID on the way back, and I didn't know it.
Really?
Wait, what?
Yeah,
I'm backing away from the table right now.
That was back in February, so whatever contagion had burned through. We saw we had met with Sharon Yeblon, who is who's been a friend of our podcast since the get go, and she invited me to come down and visit her in Los Feliz in Los Angeles in a lovely, lovely neighborhood. And she goes, let's go out and do the horror movie Los Angeles circuit. And I said, hell yeah. And she goes, oh, and I got a friend and he loves horror movies too. And so we went and we caught The Hunger at the New Beverly Theater.
It was awesome.
And yeah, and the New Beverly Theater.
My first time too.
Really?
Not my first time at the New Bev.
Oh,
but my
okay.
First time seeing The Hunger.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, I was thinking. I figured you guys were regulars at the New Beverly, which is for those who are not in the know, that is Quentin Tarantino's cinema.
Oh, cool.
It's on the Sunset Strip. Is that where it is?
It's close to Hollywood. It's on Beverly.
Yep. And then we had lunch at this really super cool Jewish deli. But anyways, yeah, Mike is flailing around going, speed things up. This is the classic
Let's introduce the rest of the folks on the podcast too.
Oh shit. Yeah. Come on. Okay. I'm your host, Eric Lee.
And this is Mike Campbell from Portland, Oregon. And with us, we also have
Liz Williams from New Orleans.
Hey,
Liz. Who dat, go Saints.
Hey, Liz.
Who dat?
Who dat?
Not who day. Who dat?
No.
Who day is staying home. So anyways, the reason why I say that we have a professional is John, as it turns out, has been a movie trailer producer and has had the opportunity to work on a number of movies that you may be familiar with, like Black Christmas, Planet Terror, Death Proof, and a number of others. So welcome aboard, John. This is...
Thank you.
We have, and I think we just prior to our logging on here, we talked about how you've become a bit of a jaded veteran, that you have some thoughts about the industry that we'd love to pick your brain on and about how the process works because, you know.
Yeah, can you walk us through like soup to nuts how like A to Z, how does a trailer get made?
I can tell you general because each campaign will be different, of
sure,
course.
Sure, sure. Works.
But I can run you through the general one pretty quickly too.
Yeah.
Basically, it starts with it starts with the client, you know, awarding you the job, right?
Yeah.
And then the studio will either have something they want to push from the movie or not. So they might say, look, this one's got Bruce Willis, so you need to show Bruce Willis, and you need to show this scene where he does this, and, you know, whatever. Or they might say, we don't know what to do, so give us some ideas.
Okay.
So it could be either one. You could get a direct order of how they want you to do it and the scenes they want you to use. Uh-huh. Or they might say, what do you want us to do? Or they might say, what would you like to do?
How often, what percentage would you assign to how would you like to do it?
More, like 80%. 80%.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. I thought it would be the other way.
I know. Well, you know, and this is why it's part of the reason that I got a little jaded too.
Sure.
The clients, you know, a lot of clients don't want to necessarily be responsible if it goes bad.
Right.
So
it was that idiot at the trailer house.
Yeah. It's very passive aggressive kind of process that starts to wear on. Yeah. That's the thing. So you got to be, as the trailer producer, you have to be able to really own it. You know, you're almost owning it more than the client is.
Right, right.
Yet there's no Oscar for best trailer.
No, there should be.
But there are Golden Trailer Awards.
Oh, okay.
And there's a Golden Trailer Awards, and there are also Key Art Awards. So those are our kind of Oscars.
Okay.
They actually do happen, Golden Trailer Awards and stuff, but...
That's cool. Do they don't have any, like, it doesn't have any impact on, like, the movie's box office or anything like that for the awards? They're truly creative and...
Great question. It's true. It does not have anything to do with the box office. Okay, it's good. Just kind of industry favorite, okay. Kind of.
So
that's a very good question.
Yeah, because there's, like, the... Like the People's Choice Awards, which is, you know, it's like, I love, you know, whatever, Transformers. That was a great movie. Made $1 billion. And then, you know, it's Transformers.
So do they give you the full film? And do they give you any other like collateral materials or anything to say, like, here's the script, or here's outtakes, or here's other stuff we shot we didn't use? You feel free to use all of it. Do you get all of that all at once?
Not all at once.
Okay.
So when I started in the trailer industry,
yeah,
I started in home entertainment.
Okay.
So I was doing a lot of home entertainment trailers, and those were a lot neater because you get the whole movie up front because the movie's already put together.
Right.
It's already been in the theater.
Okay.
So
you get a screener.
Yep.
And you've got the whole movie to work with. You get the split tracks, split audio tracks on the movie, and you could go to town. If it's a theatrical trailer, like the first theatrical trailer I ever produced on my own was Bring It On 4.
All right.
And for Bring It On 4, In It to Win It.
Much better than Bring It On 3.
Don't laugh. Those are great movies, and I will be for every single one of them.
Very good. Well, when they started with that one, all I had was the script and then like one reel of dailies. And so you start forming the trailer, you're looking at the dailies, and you're kind of waiting for more to come in. And it gets, you know, it really gets to be a crazy process because every day you get more dailies, and then you have to kind of rethink what you're doing. And the client is not quite sure which dailies you're going to get. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of like, you keep chasing the project with how much you have, and how much you have keeps changing each day.
So on average, how long would a client give you to put together a trailer, even if they're dribbling crap out to you like on a daily basis? What is it, like a couple weeks or...
No, it's a little more than that. If it's a theatrical trailer, if it's a theatrical trailer, you might have a couple of months.
Okay.
You can have a couple of months for that.
Okay.
If you have, for some of my home video trailers, those would be, could you do it in 2 weeks type of thing.
Okay.
Right. And I know that there's a tradition of doing a teaser trailer, which usually just very early, you know, a year in advance of the film, and then they'll get the final trailer that usually arrives about 3 months prior. Or something like that, and particularly now that there's
isn't the teaser trailer though kind of a modern construct?
That's what I was going to ask John. Is like that
we're in sync,
yeah?
Because oh my god,
because I have a suspicion that one of the trailers that Mike has picked was an early teaser trailer.
Interesting.
Because I think because they didn't have a whole lot of footage and they wanted to do
sure.
And I think it's actually the more impressive of the trailers of the movie that I'm thinking about.
Okay.
But you know, I know that you know, the way we think about it in today's blockbuster culture is that you have to beat Comic-Con to the punch, and so you show up with a little nugget for the fans. But the post production isn't complete, and it's like there's so much, you know, computer graphics that has to be applied to the big Star Wars-y superhero franchises.
Yeah.
But like horror films, not as much, and that they're. Because the time it takes to film a horror movie from soup to nuts is much faster for almost all of them.
Yeah.
So
true. True indeed.
I mean, what's your take on the, like, since we're a horror movie podcast, for a horror, is it easier or harder to convey the concepts in a horror trailer? Like, I think dramas would be hard.
Yeah,
dramas can be hard. You know what? One of the hardest ones I ever had to write on was kind of recent. Like, well, I think it was about 5 years ago. It was Beguiled. Did you ever see Beguiled?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Sofia Coppola one.
Yep, the remake of the Clint Eastwood
right.
one.
Mm-hmm.
That was freaking hard to write on. dramas can be hard like that. Horror movie trailers are super fun to write on because you can really have fun with the copy and, you know, you can be irreverent, and those are easier to get the expression across. It took me a long time to get to horror movie trailers because I started at Disney.
Okay.
So for a long, long time, I was the Disney guy, and I was doing all the Disney animated classics.
Okay.
So I did like Lion King, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast. I was doing all of those campaigns. And each one of those campaigns, Disney was putting so much into all of those home video campaigns of like the double platinum edition, the platinum two disc special edition. You know, all that. Those would take up my years. I do like 6 months on The Lion King, and then 6 months on Cinderella, and then 6 months on Beauty and the Beast. Yeah, really like, took up a lot.
And they would then be doing campaigns to release all the content for. They'd be going through the catalog year by year.
Yep, and then it would go back in the vault.
So it's six months, but for a single trailer though.
No, for a whole campaign.
Oh, for the whole campaign. Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha.
So that's,
okay.
Yep. You start with the trailer, and then you follow with the TV spots.
Okay. Okay.
And then radio spots.
Interesting.
Radio spots. Wow.
They used to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'd have to produce radio spots, and then later on, social media spots.
Sure. Right, right. Well, yeah. You know, that's the thing that's so fascinating. I'm taking a class through the Hollywood Theater in Portland right now on Roger Corman.
Yeah, I missed that first one.
And I'm actually a trailer collector. I have like all the 42nd Street Forever trailer collections. I have the Fantastic Movie trailers, which I think is out of Toronto. I have a bunch from Something Weird out of Seattle. I have some from Sinister Cinema out of Medford. I mean, I have so many horror trailer collections. Well, it's not just horror, but it's
largely
like,
grindhouse stuff.
It's grindhouse horror stuff. But I was struck by all in as it relates to the Roger Corman class. I was struck by it because Joe Dante was talking about that's where he got his start. Before he did Piranha, before he did Gremlins, he was in the Roger Corman trailer studio, and he was just sitting there as a young early 20-something year old grinding out trailers, and he spoke about it in a pretty loving way. But my guess is that coming out of the Roger Corman school, related to the whole grindhouse scene, is probably the weirder, wilder, and crazier you could be, the better. And so there probably wasn't quite the crush that you experienced with contemporary Hollywood.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Yeah, okay.
Because I know that there are the pressure is on to like if a big blockbuster, if a $150 million movie gets released and people go, God, that trailer,
right.
Like I think there's been some famous ones. Like I think like the Sonic the Hedgehog one that came out was apparently people just freaked out.
It was the teeth.
Yeah,
they had to go back and redo it. He looked too skinny.
Yep.
Where it's like it's funny how that. But you can again. You were saying liability averse. And I think I've like to get your take on the contemporary trailer scene, because there's a great movie that came out about movie posters, which talked about the death of the art of the movie poster in the 1990s,
where
it just became all headshots, and Hollywood just got lazy, and the great, the Drew Struzan painterly stuff, the ones that tell you that paint, that give you a story in the movie poster, those are gone.
Right.
And the same thing happened with trailers. You get, there's the running joke of how to do an action movie trailer. You get blah, and then you have, and then villain number one, and then conflict, and then you do the beat by beat thing, and you can marry these things up, and it's just like, oh, it's so cookie cutter, it's awful.
They're templatized pretty much.
Yep,
it is. It is cookie cutter. That's what it's gotten to be, and it just doesn't have as much soul. Like I used to watch trailers all the time. I wanted to get into trailers because I loved them. I couldn't get enough trailers. Mm-hmm. And even when I was doing it and I was working on trailers, I would watch the competitive trailer reel every month. And I just I was so inspired. I really, really liked them. But like you say, it just started to become like the same kind of trailer over and over. And also just the interpersonal relations just start to wear on you in that culture, can I say?
Sure.
Yeah, in that. Mm-hmm.
But John, going back to your initial love of trailers, was there a trailer? Because I will tell you in my case, the trailer that really floored me once upon a time in 1985, I was at a drive-in and I saw the trailer for Cannibal Holocaust. They claimed it to be have been banned in 28 countries. When I saw the trailer, I was like, it should be banned in all countries, and I'm not. I was like not sure if I was actually watching real cannibalism and real people dying. It was so shocking to me. But is there a trailer that just left you like just completely aghast when you were coming up, or one that inspired you to get into the biz?
That's a great question too, and the trailers that really stay with you and the ones that really inspire me are the simple ones that just leave you with a haunting idea that you sure. can't shake.
Yep.
And so the one is the one of my picks for today that we're talking about. Yep. It's that old 1978 movie Magic.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yep. So yeah, we'll be spinning the trailer audio for you folks so you can actually get that snippet. But that's a real short one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's perfect.
It's super short. Yeah. It's super short. It's like a teaser, but it's like a little rhyme, and it freaked me out. Now, in 1978, I was only 8 years old.
Right.
So it super freaked me out. But man, it stayed with me for a long time. And as I got into trailers in my professional life, I kept going back to the feeling that gave me, and I wanted to hit someone as hard as that had hit me.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I miss now in trailers is nobody does a trailer that isn't borrowing heavily from the movie and is actually creating its own. I think Deadpool might have done that, but Alfred Hitchcock. I think one thing I will spare you guys this time out. Hitchcock did Psycho and The Birds, and the trailers were little 5 minute movies.
Yeah.
And he would just be doing these funny little narrations that were very wry and clever. But they didn't give anything away. They'd show like at the very end, Tippi Hedren, and then a bunch of birds flying around.
Right.
But the rest of the time it was Hitchcock walking around talking about what the birds were going to do because he was eating a turkey. You know, it was
right.
And I thought that was brilliant. And I don't know if it was because they didn't that they got that was a trailer that came out way in advance, or it was just Hitchcock wanting to do something special. And nobody does that anymore.
I think he was the only one that really did that kind of thing. He'd be like, "Let me walk you through the set of my movie."
Right.
Yeah.
Do you you know it's crazy, John, when you mentioned Magic, I do recall the Magic trailer as well coming out, and I was about a couple years older, but same basic time frame. But the thing that floored me too was with a lot of the trailers from the 70s and 80s. So obviously they would do a TV cut and then they would do the cinema cut. But the TV cut was oftentimes just as terrifying. The only thing that was different, it was just like slightly shorter than the theatrical cut. Right. And it seemed to me like, and this might be complete hyperbole, but they were showing those goddamn things at like 6 o'clock in the evening. And, you know, like any kid wandering by the TV is going to see the magic trailer and be absolutely shaken to his core.
Yeah.
That's true. You know, when I would do TV spots, you have to do mom spots and kid spots. Those are the two kinds. The mom spots are for adults.
Uh-huh.
At least, well, this was how Disney did it. Sure. Disney called it mom spots and kid spots. And so the kid spots would air, you know, up until 8 o'clock, and then mom spots would air after that.
Oh, interesting. And okay.
I think back then in the 70s, I don't think they were separating them by like adult time and kid time.
No, they weren't.
Well, now you get red band trailers, right? Where you can have, where you're getting, because of streaming, streaming stuff. And I think that's something of the last, 10 years, maybe? Mm-hmm. Get R-rated content in trailers. Yeah.
In your trailers.
Yeah. I like doing the Red Band trailers. I did a Red Band trailer for this Anchor Bay comedy called The Grand. And that was really funny. It had a lot of, I could like drop F-bombs and I could show some crazy stuff. Same thing with this like Session 9 type of movie Dark Feed. No, there's a movie called Dark Feed. Uh-huh. That's like Session 9. Okay. It's not like that was a Red Band that I got to do too. And I could just have people being like axed in the head and stuff like that. That's interesting because that's stuff I couldn't do with Cinderella and the Lion King.
Right.
Well, I think Cannibal Holocaust was not shy about its content in the trailer in 1985.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah, because it probably was not screening in advance of, you know, Lion King.
No.
Well, there was the great thing where I think one of Liz's movies screened in front of Peter Rabbit. And in Australia, goodness. Yeah, it was like in somewhere, I think it was in Perth, and so you'll know, we'll talk about one of Liz's when we get to it.
Yeah. Well, listen, John, please.
Well, I wanted to express just one of the craziest trailer assignments that I had, which was to take this trailer about this post-apocalyptic world that these young adults kind of move through. It was completely in German, and it was called Hell. And it's it's all German, and these young adults are moving through this post-apocalyptic world. And the assignment to me was, all right, cut a trailer, tell everyone what it's about, but make sure you hide the fact that it's in German. So I'm like, okay, how am I going to show this? How am I going to do this whole trailer without having anyone talk in German or anything? And what I did was I wrote a monologue for the main character, and I had a voiceover artist read it in English and just played that over the trailer. So the whole trailer was like this woman being like, today we did this, da-da-da-da, and she kind of like gives a diary entry, and then I just had to show images, and I didn't have to have any dialogue.
Interesting.
The whole VO dialogue, yeah.
Yeah, huh. Yeah. Although I think there have been some great trailers that had almost no dialogue.
We're probably going to get to a couple.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One of them. Yeah, yeah.
At least one. At least
two.
One.
I think we've got two.
Okay.
Yeah. That I can think of. Liz has got one. You've got one.
Yep.
And one that I think is none of us picked, but I think is one of the all time greats is Alien.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why I'm not actually doing that one for you is when we play the audio, all you're going to hear is screeching and groaning, and
you're just going to hear
eerie
aliens.
Music, and then it says in space, no one can hear you scream. Cut. Right, and everybody remembers that one, and that's one of the best trailers ever made.
Does it actually say in space, no one can hear you scream?
Yes, at the very.
Is it just fonted on the screen? I can't remember.
I think there's like the classic low voice.
In space, no one can hear you scream.
That's like you were saying how it's effective. Everybody remembers that. I think the problem with trailers lately is they're too damn long. I mean, you're seeing half of the movie. I used to love watching trailers, but now if it's a movie that I'm like, oh, that sounds cool, I don't want to watch the trailer because I feel like too much is going to get given away.
Yeah. I'd rather
my husband
go in blind.
Sit around watching trailers for like 2 hours. And I'm like, I don't want to see it. I want to see that movie. So I don't want to watch the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. I used to eat up the trailers. Now I just want to go in blind.
Right. I don't want to know anything. So a short, effective spot like Alien or like, I guess one of the ones I'm going to talk about without its marketing behind it, gives you the mood, mm-hmm. says like, I want to see that. You only need 60 seconds. You don't need 2.5 minutes to show the story of the movie. You just want to get someone's butt in the seat.
Right. But if it's just giving you the mood, then that's the teaser.
Right. Yeah.
Before we jump into that, I have one last question for John. I'm curious. I know you've been out of the biz for a little bit of time, but I'm curious about your thoughts, even if it's just speculative in nature, about the future of the hype machine that is the trailer.
Yeah.
You think we're doomed or is there hope?
As we move to VR, I don't know. Maybe this could be some interesting things. Like right now on VR, like my son just got like an Oculus Quest 2.
Uh-huh.
And I saw on it there's a Blair Witch thing and an It thing. Ooh, and I'm like, yeah. You know what? I'm too afraid to do it.
I have to do that. My nephew just got one, and I played Fruit Ninja last night on that for the first time and thought it was mind-blowing, mind-blowingly amazing. No,
yeah. Horror in VR is it's a shit-your-pants kind of a thing. It's a little too personal.
It's very easy to get scary in VR because it could be right behind you and give you a heart attack. It's really freaky.
It's true. It's true.
And seriously, I have not built up the nerve to do it, but I'm going to. I want to do the Blair Witch one and the It one, and I'm freaked out that I'm scared. It's just I'm not used to being scared.
Awesome.
But I bring that up now because I think that with our as this new technology kind of gets more pervasive and we all get it, I think that's going to give us more opportunity for some interesting types of marketing. Yeah. But I don't know. Okay. It'll still feel, you know, when you're marketed to, we're all very savvy that we know when we're being marketed to now because we're always being marketed to, and you kind of just know it. And so it kind of it could be a little bit of a buzzkill in the middle of your experience to suddenly be marketed.
Right.
But I think in these VR games and stuff, the marketing is going to come to us a little more interestingly. Yes. Like it'll be part of the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've done a couple of them. I did. They had an Alien Covenant one, which was the backburster scene.
And oh wow!
That was intense. And you played the role of one of the nurses who was in the room, and as the guy started falling apart, and the little critter comes after you.
Uh huh.
And you're looking around the room, and you're trying, but you could look around, but you couldn't control your movement.
Right.
And it was like, and then it comes in and it closes out and says, "Alien Covenant coming, you know, summer of 2017."
I swear, people are going to have heart attacks playing VR.
Yep.
Yeah, probably. Yes.
All right, so let's hop into the actual selections, John. Since we've already mentioned it, why don't we go ahead and talk about your first selection?
All right. My first selection is the one that I had mentioned earlier from 1978. It's just a 30-second trailer. They're calling it a trailer, but it's more like a teaser. It might even just have been a TV spot that they could have been running in theaters as well. I'm not sure. It's one shot. It's very simple. Do you want to play it first and then we talk about it, or should I talk more about it?
So we'll play it first. This is magic.
Yes, and this is magic.
Abracadabra, I sit on his knee. Presto, change-o, and now he is me. Hocus pocus, we take her to bed. Magic is free. We're dead.
Josephine Levine presents Magic, a terrifying love story, starring Anthony Hopkins, Anne Margaret, and Burgess Meredith. Rated R.
All right. So short and sweet, and lots of puppet. So, this is the quick synopsis for those. And we've talked about magic in the past, but John, why don't you go ahead and give us a brief bit about who we're seeing and what's going on?
Right. So what we're seeing in this, so what you see visually is a ventriloquist dummy, and not just any ventriloquist dummy. This guy, it's a scary looking ventriloquist dummy. They really gave him some scary features.
Cats.
And he's sitting on a person's knee. We don't really see whose knee he's sitting on because we just close in on the dummy's face. And the dummy is talking, and the dummy says that creepy, creepy rhyme. And those lines, I mean, that line, I sit on his knee, and presto change-o, now he is me. That just stayed with me as a little kid. Freaked me out. And still, you know, to this day, it still freaks me out.
And that was 1978, right? Yeah. Is that correct?
With Anthony Hopkins and Burgess Meredith.
Yeah.
And Anthony Hopkins is a ventriloquist who is down on his luck, and like this woman that he used to be in love with comes back into his life, and it kind of drives him over the edge, and the dummy starts to talk to him and put the idea of murder into his head, and it just gets... It's a guy's mind is being split. And I always, you know, it's also a personal thing for me. I always find some of the scariest stuff is when your own mind is turning against you.
Right.
Like those kinds of movies really can be effective, I feel.
And this was one instance where sex didn't sell because they had Anne Anne Margaret like at their fingertips, and they chose to use fats instead of Anne Margaret.
Just use fats, exactly. And then it was kind of an echo of like an old Twilight Zone as well. So people were still kind of people already were creeped out by ventriloquist dummies.
Right. Yeah.
And this was, I think, one of you know when I was looking at the trailer, and then the next thing that came up was Siskel and Ebert's review of it, and this is one of Gene Siskel's all time favorite horror movies.
Really?
Yeah. He said at the time when he reviewed it, he goes, the only two movies that he thought were scarier were Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist.
Wow.
That's, and he loved it. Well, Roger went,
really? I feel like Roger would have liked it. I'm surprised.
Well, yeah. he wasn't that dismissive of it, but Roger's a more hardened horror movie guy than Gene was.
He likes horror.
Well, and I'll tell you, this movie holds up and something else, because I watched it last year when we did a Dolls at, we did Creepy Dolls, yep. And I included it as one of my selections for Creepy Dolls, and man, it holds up. It is so solid. It is so well done, and just I can't even remember all the people that were originally attached to it, but there were some above and beyond Burgess Meredith, Anne Margaret, and Anthony Hopkins. Mm-hmm. From a directorial standpoint, there were some like big names attached to this.
And yeah, it's like Attenborough, I think.
Yeah, and I think Kubrick too was initially like in the mix.
Well, you know, this was an era. You know, the 70s, this chunk of the 70s, you had things like The Omen and movies that were chasing after that Exorcist success.
Yeah,
and
so for
they
sure.
Were put they, and I, the studios were putting up big money for these things.
Yep, indeed.
I think the writer was William Goldman.
Oh wow,
that's right. That is right. Yep, that's true. That's true. All right, let's move on to
Liz and Liz's first film.
All right, so this is not a short trailer. This is a long, drawn out and horrific trailer, because this is the trailer for 1972's The Last House on the Left.
Hell yeah.
Wes Craven's and exploitation film. And the reason I picked this one is, first, the trailer is utterly horrific because the film is utterly horrific, and the trailer does not hold back from showing you what is going to happen in this film. But while it's not 100% true or known that this is where this phrase came from, the tagline was, you know, you have the deep voice trailer narrator saying, to avoid fainting, keep repeating, it's only a movie, it's only a movie, it's only a movie. And so that's what sticks in your mind with this one, is that it's so horrific that you have to tell yourself, this is not real, this is only a movie. And the marketing team said that, you know, the guy who made the trailer got his idea because his wife couldn't even watch him putting the trailer together. And he was telling her that, because she kept covering her eyes, but those words had been used twice before, back in the 60s, in another set of trailers or set of marketing materials. So, Last House on the Left, it's a totally 70s trailer. It has, you know, the Mr. Trailer voice. It tells you the entire thing. It's, you know, two girls going out on the town looking for drugs. This is what they find. So it's the world's worst after school special of, if you go out to party and look for drugs, this is what's going to happen to you. But
let's give it a listen.
Marie and her friend.
I feel like a woman for the first time in my life.
Two girls from the suburbs going to the city to have a good time.
Oh, this is my roommate, Sam.
Hi, girls.
This is my sister, Martha. Martha, these girls, you know, want to buy some grass.
Four killers on the loose, also looking for a good time.
And the road leads to nowhere.
They meet in the last house on the left. What began as a birthday party ends as a nightmare.
I want to give you something.
I don't want that.
It's worth a lot.
I don't want
it. I want to be your friend.
Oh, you want to get free.
I want to be your friend.
Are you all right?
Yeah. Hey, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Just what did happen in the last house on the left? Dr. Collingwood lived there.
Are you sure we're not going to put you folks in any trouble?
No nonsense. Our home is yours.
His wife, live there.
I've always dreamed of a man who could take me easily.
So did their daughter, Marie. They all lived there.
Junior.
To avoid fainting, keep repeating to yourself, it's only a movie. Only a movie. Only a movie. Only a movie. Last House on the Left.
Only a movie.
Only a movie. It's only a movie. It's only a movie. So
yeah, you know, that's what I love. That's what I love about that too. Because that's what I was asking John earlier about the sort of the hype machine. Because it's like, you know, Hollywood didn't used to be afraid of the hype machine. I mean, obviously, especially the Grindhouse films, and they were totally willing to say, to throw in cheesy lines like "It's only a movie," and you just have to keep repeating to yourself. And it's like that. That sort of like fun, kind of obvious hype. It seems like it's kind of gone. It's been pounded out of Hollywood.
But I think Last House on the Left, because of the way it looked.
Yeah.
And really.
It looks real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so gritty. Gritty.
Yeah. And gritty. Unlike, you know, this was, you know, we've had this conversation a number of times about the MPAA now allowing R-rated movies. Was this X when it came out?
It should have been X.
I think
Ebert said, like, I can't find any redeeming value. Other critics walked out. Like, this is a hard movie to even watch. Obviously, the trailer
so gnarly.
Was from 71 or 72. I was not yet watching movie trailers, let alone this movie trailer. But seeing it as just a horror fan and knowing it's legendary.
Oh, yeah.
Those lines.
Yep.
So
yep.
It sticks yeah. with you.
Yeah.
All right, Eric.
Okay.
What is your first choice?
So I am going for horror comedy.
What?
So this is a movie directed by James Gunn, starring Nathan Fillion, Elizabeth Banks, Michael Rooker, and Greg Henry. This is Slither. And it starts out with a cheeky, brazen boast. That it comes at you, because we'll give you the audio, but you'll have to, in order to appreciate it, what they will say is, what do all these movies have in common? And it talks Halloween and The Exorcist and The Night of the Living Dead. And it's like, these movies are for sissies.
Right, I remember that.
And so it's this great punchline, and it goes, and it's so gross, so disturbing. And it gives you, and it's just, and this is what the kind, there are different kinds of trailers. There's some trailers that try and establish a cohesive storyline so that you understand what you're getting. You don't need to do that with Slither. You just show them lots of, you know, great images of, you know, hordes of little slugs crawling all over the place and give you a sense of the humor in it, because, you know, the Nathan Fillion, this was before Nathan Fillion became sort of a household name. I think he had. Mm-hmm. I think he may have done Firefly, but Firefly was still a bit of a cult hit.
Yeah. Let's give it a listen.
Yeah. And so, Slither.
Throughout the years, these classic horror films had one thing in common. From Universal Pictures comes a film so shocking.
We've got a real problem here.
So disgusting.
Don't let him in your mouth!
No!
It will change the face of horror.
They're doing things to people, turning them into some kind of monsters.
How's everybody's evening? Good? Good.
Something's wrong with me.
Slither.
Have you ever seen anything like that?
Me neither. And I watch Animal Planet all the time.
And a hat's off to Greg Henry for providing some great comic relief. He was, you know, if Nathan Fillion was the straight guy, Greg Henry was the wiseacre, the audience member going. He gives that great bit about Animal Planet. It's like, man, what's going on here? and he had some other lines in the movie. I think one of the other things that can be difficult for a trailer like this, for a horror comedy, is not to give up all the best jokes.
Right.
Yeah. And there were plenty of them. You know, James Gunn's sense of humor really comes through.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you the poor, you know, the everything that you want, but not too much. The unfortunate fate of poor Brenda, who turned into a blimp, and closes out. It's like, something's wrong with me. And you're going, oh my God. And that was like, sold. I'm going to go see this thing. That woman turned into a blimp. But they didn't show you the Grant monster. The Michael Rooker turning into this gigantic tentacle beastie.
Well, you gotta save some stuff.
You know, that was spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen Slither. But if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably familiar with Slither. So
very possible.
This movie, I think the reason why it's on the list is it totally had me jazzed to see it. I saw the trailer and I go, I can't wait. I'm going opening day.
Heck, this
is going to be so much fun.
We did. I think we saw it.
We totally did. And it was so much fun.
It was
exactly what. It delivered on its promise. So yep. That's my first pick. Slither.
Okay. My first
pick. And it got your butt in the seat.
Oh, it totally did. Yeah. So you know, relative to, you know, that's the trailer producer's job is to get something that will get mm-hmm. you to put your cash on the table.
And it worked.
And it did.
All right. We're going to move into a film that Ridley Scott calls one of only a few really, really great movies. Ridley Scott said that. Hmm. True story. This is 1974's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Let's give it a listen.
This is the movie that Rex Reed called the most horrifying motion picture I have ever seen. This film is positively ruthless in its attempt to drive you right out of your mind. It accomplishes everything it sets out to do with brilliance and unparalleled terror.
Franklin!
This is the horror movie to end them all. Called the most horrifying motion picture I have ever seen. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre from New Line Cinema.
So, amongst all the other things that's great about this film, it has, I think, and John, I'd be really curious to hear what you think about this. I think it's got the greatest stinger of all time. That.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's just like you hear that, and it's like you instantaneously, you don't even, I think, have to be a horror fan to know that stinger in Texas Chainsaw is it's just bad news. It's just absolutely bad news when that sound is played.
Yeah, that atonal kind of crunchy sound.
Yeah.
Ah.
It's almost like a Polaroid coming out of a.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And this of course, the voiceover narration was done by John Larroquette. Well, true. It really was.
Are you for real?
Yeah, John Larroquette did. He was. Yeah, he was
a fix. Being honest, it's true.
Oh.
Yeah, he was affixed to it. I think he was in. I can't remember exactly his connection to Toby Hooper, but he was a film. He was because John Larroquette's originally from New Orleans, and
right.
he had. I don't know what exactly the connection was, but yeah,
there was some reason. But he did the VO there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
The thing I loved about it again, and I've already said this a million times on the podcast, is just sort of the hype behind it and the conceit, which is a completely false conceit, is that you know, it talks about that this is something that really happened, and people still to this day are Googling, did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre really happen? Based on a trailer from 50 years ago, they're seeing that and they're saying to themselves, oh my God, this is so horrifying. It had to have really happened. And so if you type in, did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre really happen? Guess what? It is going to, there is a Google search that's already been done on that. It will self-generate, did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre really happen? Based on the trailer.
And enough of the suggestive, terrifying moves without it's like you saw the meat hook.
Yep.
You saw the chainsaw bust through a barn door.
Yeah. You see the door close. Yeah.
And then you see Leatherface's first monstrous where he comes out with the hammer.
Yep.
Right. You know, and it's just these quick snippets, enough just to sink in your brain, and you go, oh shit.
Yeah.
Again, you know, this is early in the lift. You know, how far can you go?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I have no idea who did the trailer or like who put it together, whether it was, you know, how much influence Toby Hooper had on it, but it is a masterwork in trailer work.
Yeah.
Masterwork in trailer work. Yeah. Yes.
Well, would you look at that? We're running a little long. We're going to take the opportunity here to push the pause button and split this recording into halves so that we can continue to share all these fantastic horror trailers with you. So stay tuned for episode 116B, which we will be putting up post-haste. Until then, it's the Scariest Things Podcast.